Hello, this is Lisa Bowerman, and you're listening to The Sirens of Audio.
I am the one.
Returning. He is returning. They are returning. I am returning.
And he is me too.
Returning. We are returning.
That's right, me one. We have returned.
Can you see the lines being etched onto my face with all the stress and worry about this?
G'day audiophiles, you are listening to The Sirens of Audio, the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who and the audio medium. My name is Dwayne.
And my name is Philip. G'day audiophiles, great to see you all. G'day Dwayne.
G'day Philip, and we are privileged today to be joined by a very, very special guest from the Proctor Who and Trek This Out podcasts. It's Suki Kark. G'day Suki.
Hello Dwayne, hello Philip.
G'day Suki, great to have you with us.
So, where are you coming from? Are you coming from the land of the Electric Light Orchestra?
The Electric Light Orchestra? I don't know, where's the land of the Electric Light Orchestra?
Didn't they come from Birmingham?
You're talking to the wrong person from Proctor Who about music. Remember, I do not pick any music on there. But, yes, it's quite close by. I'm coming quite close by from Birmingham. It's in the Wolverhampton.
Okay. Ah, very good. So, tell us a bit about how things are going on Proctor Who at the moment and Trek This Out. What's happening? What's in store? What's coming up?
Oh, we got an episode coming up on The Deadly Assassin on Proctor Who quite soon, as soon as we get round to recording that. And that's going to be, that's a classic story. So really looking forward to recording a podcast on that. And then on we've got The Defector coming up on Trek This Out. And that's one that I'm not quite familiar with, but it should be another good episode. But it's mainly down to the banter between the people. I mean, when you have a good little band of people that's actually on the story, recording the podcast with you, you can get some really good feedback and some good dialogue going. It's great. It's good.
The Defector's a really great episode. One of my favourites, actually. It's really good. I've been listening to a few of your Trek This Out episodes recently and been enjoying them.
Oh, thank you. I think that's mainly down to the other people on there. It ain't nothing to do with me. I'll just sit there and listen, and they call me granddad, and that's about it.
That's why we listen. All right.
Well, yeah, this is it.
You know what I see, Suki? You know what I see, Philip? Right up ahead.
Yes.
I see there's a hole.
It's a rabbit hole. Let's go! Meep, meep. All right. So for this little rabbit hole, I'm going to talk to both of you about, have you noticed something strange going on in the state of fandom at the moment? What's going on in fandom, guys? Have you noticed anything strange?
I'm just going to say there's a lot of speculation about the new Doctor. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that in fandom, there seems to be some kind of a split. There's either You love the current era or you hate the current era. But what I've noticed is it's not just Doctor Who fandoms. There's lots and lots of different fandoms that even Star Trek is the same. So have you noticed that in Star Trek as well? That you've got people who like the Discovery and don't like the Discovery, Picard, etc.?
I think people are polarizing more and more on every topic.
There's a lot of divide, as you said, between old fandom and new fandom, and they don't seem to gel in the middle. You might find the odd welcoming space, but more often than not, it's a case of if you don't like this era of a show, then you're not my friend, you're not you're not a true fan. And I have seen it a lot on Twitter. I tend to stay off other social media platforms, but on Twitter, which I used to find quite a delight being on. It's just a hateful place. I don't know if you guys have seen the same. I mean, it is ridiculous sometimes when you have two massive divides and they just can't seem to meet in the middle.
Because that's one thing that I used to love about Doctor Who fandom, is that when we got together, we're all different backgrounds, different interests outside of Doctor Who. But when we got together, we were passionate about Doctor Who or our other fandoms. And I'm noticing a lot of people in our game, in the podcasting game, just saying that we're all getting pretty fed up with this big divide, people on both sides. And I certainly know I am. I'm one that wants to just enjoy the show. I don't want to get involved in politics. I'm not interested. I'm interested in the show. So I don't know how you guys feel. What about you, Suki?
You're right there. I mean, I have noticed it, but on our podcast itself, we did have a bit of a divide where a couple of us didn't really like the new era, and some of us did like it, right? And we managed to keep it within the episode and kept talking about it, and we kept our dialogue going, but we had our difference of opinions, and which I found refreshing. But when you go to certain other podcasts, right, you do notice they hate that era. They don't hate. They like that era, and sometimes it just does my head in. There's YouTube channels that I've seen online where they absolutely hate the new era, right? And it does my head in that you don't. If you hate the new era, you've still got the classic era to fall back on. You can have a good. You can go around watching all the classic era. And you don't have to watch any of the new era. If you don't like the storylines, you wait a few years, and there might be a new era that will come along, and you're just going to love it again. But it doesn't seem to be happening now. There seems to be that big, massive divide that Dwayne has said that it's just doing my head in, and it really is. I mean, Philip, what do you think? Is that what you're finding as well?
Well, I'm partly wondering what you mean by new era, because the new era is now 16 years old, if that's what you're talking about. And I think even the new era is not the new era. It was the new era the last 3 or 4 years.
Yes, that's what I probably mean, yes.
So, that new era. It's hard to even get definitions because we look at a show that's came up to 60 years old. I do think this did happen before. I think during the Colin Baker, when Colin Baker came out and Eric Sorwood towards the end of his reign, divided fandom. And I've got a Doctor Who bulletin, which is just hate and venom and loathness towards Eric Sayward and pulling apart every single bit of Colin's tenure about how evil it was, how awful the Doctor is, how everything that every time he looked the wrong way. So that was being produced back then, which now we look at the classic era and we love all the classic era and we love Colin as well. So I think time does reshape how we think. But I also think something like the Doctor Who Bulletin, you had to pay how many pounds you had to pay for, had to be produced and written and edited. And I suspect it was actually quite cautiously done and still released. Whereas now everyone can have their say within seconds. And with Twitter, you see something, you respond. You don't think, you don't stop, you don't ponder, you don't sit down and actually write it. I mean, that Doctor Who Bulletin that I've got, actually, I'd rather enjoy it. It's funny. But it is, as I said, that is a particularly illustration of a particularly vehement, and that would have taken weeks and weeks of thinking to produce it. And I can't criticize them in terms of putting in effort. Whereas with Twitter, people with no thinking, no thought, no analysis at all have just gone blah, and that I don't like.
Yes, it's instant spewing out of just hatred straight away, and it does my head in. That DWB that you're going on, I've got a wad of them in my other room over there that I've kept for however many years, 40 years, nearly 30, 40 years or whatever it is, and I've kept them, and I've not really had a good look for them. But if I was to read that now, right, and look at it from today's views, I would have think, that is just pure hatred there. And I probably wouldn't agree with anything because my opinions would have changed. This might happen again with a bit later on because I'm quite loving this new Jody Whittaker era, Chibnall era. I'm quite happy with that era, right? But maybe a bit later on the line, people that don't like it will think to themselves, oh, that's not quite bad. It's actually quite decent. A bit like Colin Baker's era. Some of them stories are rubbish. Some of them were okay. You might not have liked the portrayal of his doctor, but after a while, your opinions will change. See, it's just maybe a bit more time after this era is finished, this Chibnall era is finished, maybe people's mind will differ.
Yeah, definitely. And there's certainly shows that we look at in the classic era that at the time were rubbish, or fan wisdom was they were no good. And we now go back and say, that was fantastic. And there's other things we thought was, you know, fantastic. We go back and go, well, actually, you know, because, you know, views change, attitudes change, we age, and all those things all have a huge effect.
A perfect example for me was the Happiness Patrol. I was completely and utterly embarrassed by the Happiness Patrol at the time that it came out. I was, how old was I? 15, 16, something like that. So I wasn't able to look at it with the nuance that it was trying to portray. And, I'd got back into Doctor Who through season 22, so I was wanting that hard, gritty Colin Baker that they'd left behind by that stage. So, I found it really hard to get into shows like Paradise Towers, Happiness Patrol. But I've since, many years later, gone back to really appreciate them, like you said, Suki. And the same might happen for people who dislike the Chibnall era. They might go back one day and think it's fantastic. Whereas today, they're, you know, like me, they may be embarrassed like I was of the Happiness Patrol. Who knows? I think I'm tending to avoid social media a lot more than I used to these days. I know that for a fact. I just think it's an interesting state of affairs. Maybe we should leave that rabbit hole. Oh, yes, Suki.
No, I was just going to say, avoiding social media is one thing, right? But you do meet a lot of people that you will never know or get to know unless you're on their social media, especially if they've got the same sort of likes. So even though I might avoid certain areas of Twitter, I will absolutely love other areas of it, right? Because I know they've got the same sort of opinions I have, right? So I'm not sure if you want to avoid social media altogether, because you might miss out on meeting somebody, a really like-minded person, right?
That's true. Any other thoughts on that topic, Philip?
No, it's one that you can keep exploring, that's for sure.
Let's get out of the rabbit hole. All right, this time I thought we'd have a look at three stories from Big Finish. And I was inspired, as I've said previously, by the boys from the Doctor Who show who recently put up a poll of Big Finish stories so that their audience could select which one they would review. They ended up going with The Holy Terror, but one of the stories was one of the ones we're going to have a look at today, which is Return of the Crotons. Dave Kitchen picked that one because he thought it looked interesting, didn't know a thing about it. So it got me thinking, and I had the thought before, but this inspired me to actually get it going, was to do monsters from the classic series who were doing a slight return in Big Finish. So only one appearance in Big Finish. So we've got three stories to look at: Return of the Crotons, the Return to the Web Planet, and the Feast of Axos. So I thought we'd start with Return of the Crotons. And to do that, I'll throw in a trailer right here.
Power levels rising. What is that? Power is being diverted towards. The alien high brain is interfering with our plan. It must be dispersed. Access the primary unit's chamber.
We got company.
What are these other humans doing here?
I needed them.
The alien hybrid is diverting power. These creatures must all be dispersed so that the process can be reset.
No, the process must continue.
So, Philip, do you remember the first time you saw The Crotons, the TV episode? Because I do.
So do I. It was an ABC repeat. The ABC had purchased some old black and white Doctor Who, so I'd only ever seen the colour ones. And I knew there was some black and whites out there. I'd seen some at the Doctor Who Club, but the Crotons was one of the episodes that the ABC repeated. And I was so excited. In fact, so excited, I forced my parents to buy a video recorder.
Yeah.
Which we got for the third episode of The Mind Robber.
Yeah, because The Mind Robber was first, wasn't it? They showed 2 second Doctor stories, The Mind Robber. And I can't remember what was surrounding it. Was it Colin Baker's stories surrounding it, Trial of a Time Lord, or was it John Pertwee stories? I'm not sure.
But all of a sudden, out of the blue,
The Mind Robber appears on the TV, and it blew my mind. And, of course, then the Crotons came, and I was equally, even though the Crotons gets panned a lot these days in fandom, I adored this story when I first saw it on TV. What are your recollections of that TV story, Sookie?
Well, if you're UK-based fans of a certain age, as I am, you will know that this story was repeated just at the time Tom Baker left the show and Peter Davison was about to start. To bridge the gap between 7 years of Tom Baker and the start of a new Doctor, they got together some shows and they put them out, and one of them was the Crotons. And it's just it was a nice surprise seeing black and white Doctor Who that was being shown early evening on BBC Two. And this is, I think, 1981, 1980. And this, one of the reasons probably why this was shown is because it was one of the only ones that still existed in the archives, right? Because most of it had already gone walkabout into a skip.
So, was that the Five Faces of Doctor Who's season?
Five Faces of Doctor Who, yes. Do you remember the other stories, or is this, or do you
know? Unearthly Child, Three Doctors, Carnival of Monsters, and Legopolis.
Oh, well done, Philip. Well done.
And I was in England to see them. I knew that that's what was being shown. That was Doctor Who magazine teaching me that stuff.
Yes. But as I say, it's nostalgia, because as kids, I was about 11, 12 at the time, and it's just seen brand new, well, to us, to me, brand new stories, because we didn't have repeats on the BBC. We'd be shown a story once, and that was it. You'd have to wait for the target book to come out to remember what was going on, to get the feel of the story again. So, yeah, the Crotons, at the time, it was a good story, because you had great monsters, great visually looking monsters. Might have been black and white. You had Patrick Troughton and Jamie McCrimmon, right, Fraser Rhines, in the story. So you really, it was like classic companion Doctor. But watching it again, and I think I've only seen it once, maybe twice, since that initial showing. It's okay. It ain't great, but it's okay.
It does have Philip Maddock in it. So that was his first appearance of 4 appearance in classic Doctor Who. So there was also someone who appeared in the Reign of Terror as well. So there was a couple of actors who'd been in different stories in that in the Crotons, and we all know that was sort of a Robert Holmes script that was brought in to replace something else, but there are a monster that was brought back for this particular story, Return of the Crotons, featuring the Sixth Doctor and Charlie. Sookie, when I asked you to join us to talk about these today, you sent me a picture of your CDs. They still had the plastic wrapper on them. You'd never heard them before.
Don't tell everybody. I have listened to them.
You have now.
Yes. Well, when you sent me the initial list of stories that we were going to have a look at, I thought they sound very familiar. And then I had a look at my Big Finish audios that I've got behind me, and I thought, oh, yeah, there they are. And I realised I've got about 20, 30 stories I've bought over the years or I've been gifted. And two out of the 20, how many stories Big Finish have actually produced, I've actually got for this episode that you asked me to review. And I think that's a bit strange. And they just still happen to be in their cellophane. So it was one of these big, massive coincidences.
So what's your history with Big Finish? Not a regular listener?
No, I'm not a regular listener. My history with Big Finish is that I did start buying the very first about the first four stories that Big Finish did. And this is through a subscription that my friend had got, and he was buying on everybody's behalf. So he'd buy the Sirens of Time, and then Phantasmagoria, and then I can't remember what the other one was. And then I was also starting to have a family at the time, and the amount of money I was actually paying was, and because I wasn't really properly listening to them, I thought I can't justify spending this amount of money. Right, so that after about four or five CDs that I bought, I stopped this subscription, and or stopped buying them off Roger. And since then, it's just been sporadic, where I bought special releases like the Light at the End, and there's a couple of Russell T Davies ones that were based on his novels that he bought out.
Yeah, Damaged Goods.
So, Damaged Goods and The Well-Mannered War. I can't remember what the others are. The Romance of Crime and the English Way of Death.
Yep.
Right, and buying these odd ones here and there. So I have been keeping up. But then I also listen to Nick Briggs's Big Finish podcast as well. And they do give free freebies on there. And because I'm also part of the Big Finish newsletter, they also send out a link to download the free episodes as well. So I've always kept listening to content coming from Big Finish over the years. So, yeah, that's my history.
Okay. So when you took this one out of its plastic wrap, put it in your CD drive, what was your first impressions of Return of the Crotons? Did you know much about Charlie and the Sixth Doctor, how they ended up together?
Yes, I did now, because I think Charlie was one of the ones that I did actually have when Paul McGann came back. I did buy the initial run of that, and she was the companion to him. So I knew about Charlie, but I didn't know Charlie was with Colin Baker's Doctor. I thought she was an Eighth Doctor companion, and had seen her in this one, or listened to her in this one. It was a bit strange. But the initial reaction to Return, it was just a... It's a simple story where it's just another, what are they called? Dinotrope? Dinotrope of the Crotons has been discovered, and it's Dr. Astor's 40. It was good. It was all right. I enjoyed it.
Philip, your first impressions of this?
Well, I just want to go back a step in terms of just talking about the subscriber specials.
Yes.
Because both this and the Return to the Bed Planet are subscriber specials, which is something that Big Finish used to do. And Sookie wants to say something. Go on, Sookie.
No, I was going to say, those two, they were presents from a friend of mine, right? So that's why they were not part of my subscriber as a subscriber, because they are from 2009, 2011 or something. Yeah. So they're quite late on in the run. But these were like Christmas presents given to me from a friend. He's still in the cellophane.
Right, well, they were freebies for your friends. That's why I gave them away. So for a few years, Big Finish, to encourage people to subscribe, put together a subscriber special. So a single CD that came out once a year in December. And so anyone who had a subscription that went over that December period managed to pick them up. And they made big deals out of them. These were the first two, I think. Actually, there might have been one earlier. But they end up being, there's a Five Companions subscriber special, which is amazing. There's a Four Doctors one. So they really put a lot of effort into trying to get people these amazing one-offs so people would subscribe. And I think the thing that got me, I was expecting the quality to be more like the freebies the Big Finish magazine often gave away. So often Big Finish used to do things for the Doctor Who magazine. And I love those little stories. There's the Leopard. Veiled Leopard, and there was a Unit One, and there's a Benny one. So these Ratings War, that's great. So there's some great little stories that Big Finish used to do for Doctor Who magazine, and they were high quality, but I had forgotten how good these ones were, because I've not listened to a subscriber special for a long time, and popping in Return of the Crotons, it was big and mammoth and a huge story. And it was, I was surprised at how well they took it, and also how important it was for the range. For those who don't know, the Charlie and the Eighth Doctor part, I'm pretty sure both of them think the other person's dead. And or Charlie at least gets deserted. She believes her doctor's dead. I think he thinks she's dead, so he's gone as well. And the TARDIS appears, and she runs in thinking, oh, no, he's alive, and it's the earlier doctor. But she knows she can never tell the earlier doctor who she is or what's going to happen to him. And so there's this whole series of stories where she's hiding who she is. And
the Sixth Doctor's suspicious the whole time.
And I was surprised at how much this story actually played on that storyline.
It did a lot, didn't it?
It was a very big key moment in terms of she'd give away bits of information. And you could hear Colin Baker saying, well, how do you know that? And how do you know this and why? And she's playing dumb and lying to him. So that was actually quite an important theme throughout it. But I think the other thing just got me, the Crotons were a real threat. And there was huge numbers of them all. And you know, there was the classic Through the Caves. So a lot of classic things happening in it. And yeah, I loved the characters and the backup characters who were there. Philip Maddock was great. I think he was a bit underused in the end. So his interview was fantastic. But yeah, it was great.
He was knocked off about two-thirds of the way through, which was
too early.
A real shame.
Surprising that was.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess the fact that when you do that, you are surprised because you certainly expect him to be all the way through. I think the thing that got me was it was actually a very second Doctor story. You could actually see Pat Troughton doing it because it's the base under siege. You've got the base under siege. You've got the commander who's a bit crazy. You've got all the things that were classic in terms of a second Doctor's show were all in this. And I think they just all those elements just work so well together.
Excellent. So this was released as part of the subscription in December 2009. It was directed and written by Nick Briggs. So this must have been a story that he was really interested in doing, if he's writing and directing it. He did the music as well. So, but the sound design was done by Thea Cochran, who's a name we don't hear too much from. She did a lot of Companion Chronicles and some Dark Shadows as well. So, I really like her sound design. The sound design from the original Crotons television series was really, really faithful to the original, but it wasn't overdone, which is something about the Web Planet one too, which I'll point out when we get to that one. Couple of old favourites, Ian Brooker popped up. He was still being used very regularly, a very, very familiar voice, but didn't he do the Croton voice that bounced off Nick Briggs' Croton voice very well? And the South African accent is very, very scary.
A bit of Afrikaans.
That's right, Afrikaans. Afrikaans.
In the original, because as I say, it's been a while since I lived, was the Crotons with that sort of slight accent on there?
Absolutely. Yeah, they were pretty much exactly as they were portrayed in this audio. So there's also mentions to the three times the Doctor has been to Nerva Beacon previously, because this is set in the same universe as the Sontaran experiment and the Ark in Space colonists going out to settle the universe after the solar flares. So you've got Ark in Space, Revenge of the Cybermen, plus Destination Nerva, which is the very first Fourth Doctor Big Finish release that there was. So that's why the Sixth Doctor says that he's been to the Ark three times. I think there was a couple of ideas in here that Nick Briggs wanted to throw in. He wanted to kind of throw in a human and merge them with the Croton crystalline structure. That was an idea that he had there, but I found myself wanting to know more about the Crotons. Where do they come from? You know, why do they do what they do? What are their motivations? So I hope that maybe one day, it's been a long time, it's been more than 10 years now, so maybe one day we'll go back and have a look and explore how the Crotons actually came about. Or maybe they, at Big Finish, they think they're not complex enough to do that. But I found myself thinking, why are they doing what they're doing? Why have we suddenly got super Crotons that are much better than the ones that we saw on television? And we saw it. The play was alluding to the fact that there were hundreds and hundreds of them, but it didn't sort of come across that there were hundreds. Did you find that too, guys?
I thought when they dropped the fact that there's all these hundreds around in other levels, I thought it seemed like it was just a bit of word peril than real peril.
Yeah.
But it also makes the story a bit more epic when they go out, oh, there's hundreds and hundreds of Krautons out there. It is sort of explained that within the story that these are more, the actual learning terminals that they've got are more advanced than the ones that he discovered on in the Krautons. So these are more advanced Krautons than those. So it is explained within the story. Maybe because the thing that I didn't understand as much until that little line came up was that Philip Maddox's character, was it Rag Cobden, Commander Cobden, right, was able to just from the power of his own mind be able to reanimate a lot of the Krautons, whereas it needed quite a few hundred of these people that were in the original Krauton series serial to be able to animate, I think, two, maybe three.
Well, no, in the end, it was only Zoe and the Doctor, and not be fully wiped, that animated those two Krautons. I think the implication is all the other people on the planet are really stupid.
Yeah, the Gons could never supply enough energy to animate the Krautons. Yeah. It was Zoe, yeah. Basically, the Doctor.
The Gons were so stupid they had no hope of ever regenerating them. But it was just the Doctor and Zoe answering a few questions brought two back to life. So I think that was believable.
Yeah. So overall, though, I think this was a really good return, so to speak, to that world, and I enjoyed everything about this. And did it sort of whet your appetite, Sookie, for more information about the Sixth Doctor and Charlie?
Well, yes, because that was the more interesting thing within the story, was what the mystery is between their relationship, right, more than whatever was happening with the Krautons, because as you said, they were a sort of a bland monster in this story, right? Because as Dwayne says, you don't know much about why they exist, how they came about, and all this. There could have been any monster could have been used within this story. So the most interesting thing really is Charlie and the Sixth Doctor's relationship. How does that actually resolve? Because I'm sure that he must be at one stage, one of them must realise who the other one is.
Do we spoil that, Philip?
No, spoilers.
It's a pretty big spoiler.
Put a spoiler warning in for everybody else. You can tell me afterwards. Don't be like that, gents. Don't be like that.
We'll tell you afterwards.
Okay, then. All right. I look forward to that.
But needless to say, India Fisher now has had two seasons of her own with Charlie. So Charlie actually has her own box sets of stories.
Well, is that after she's left the Sixth Doctor as well?
Yes. That's right. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's a big spoiler. She hasn't been killed off. Dear me, gents, you're spoiling it for me.
No. No, you should never kill Doctor Who companions ever. So I'm a huge believer. No Doctor Who companion should ever die.
And I think it's the Big Finish companions that seem to do this, but Evelyn Smythe has encountered two separate Doctors, so the Sixth and the Seventh Doctor. Charlie's encountered the Sixth and the Eighth Doctor, travelled with both of them. We have another character that we're going to talk about soon called Thomas Brewster, who's travelled with the Fifth and Sixth Doctor. So I think they're the only three that have, you know, had travels or encounters with two separate Doctors within Big Finish.
Aside from Perry.
Okay. Gotcha.
And Leela and depends what you think, Count Gordon, Jago, and Lightfoot too.
Yeah, but okay. Do you call them companions? We're getting deep now.
I know.
But as far as Perry goes, I will say that her travels with the Doctor are chronological. They don't stop, whereas Brewster stopped and then he rejoined. Mm. Evelyn stopped and then encountered the Seventh Doctor later, and then Charlie stopped, and then even though it was straight away, she encountered the Sixth Doctor separately. So it wasn't chronological. Anyway.
Isn't there a companion coming up who's travelled with the Fourth Doctor and has travelled with the Tenth Doctor?
Yes.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about Anya Kingdom.
Anya Kingdom.
That's from, Yeah, that's because that's from the bit again. That's from the Big Finish podcast. I do apologise.
And unfortunately, if you haven't heard that Fourth Doctor series, it's an excellent series. It's called the Syndicate Master Plan. It's like a sequel to Dalek Master Plan. That whole series and the companion for the Fourth Doctor, Anne Kelso, is revealed to be someone completely different, who is the one who travels with the Tenth Doctor as well, or hangs out with the Tenth Doctor. Because the Doctor hasn't got his TARDIS at the moment in Dalek Universe, has he?
No.
Still looking for it. Anyway, we digress. That's another one. Well, let's go into our second story, and we'll have a chat about that. Fifth Doctor story. Here's a trailer for it. Return to the Web Planet.
Whoa. There's a good girl. We've come far enough. We should rest.
So should Abra. You know, I'm growing quite fond of her.
As she is of you, you might take her with you when you leave. I'm sure her Dilo could spare one of her pets.
I'm not sure I could cope with the Zabi and the TARDIS. Besides, I'm not sure I can leave. Something drew my ship to Vortis, and I'd like to find out what that something is.
Are you sure the answer's here in the desolation? Among these, what do you call them, space ships?
Look around you, Asheron. Some of these ships must have been wrecked hundreds of years ago. That can't be natural. Even if every spaceship that was unlucky enough to stray into Vortis's orbit crashed, they'd be spread out across the planet, not concentrated in this one spot.
I bow to your expertise, Doctor. I suppose I think it natural because it's all I've known.
And another thing, the flora in this region is different from anything we've seen so far. I suppose it could be a mutation caused by a leakage from a ruptured fuel cell, but I doubt it. Pollution doesn't feel this rich.
Vortis is fertile, Doctor.
Here more than anywhere else. It's like an experiment, almost as if this is a testing bed for new forms of life. Desolation is entirely the wrong word for it.
It's an ancient name from the Dark Time. Some call this place Poadorauk's Domain.
Poadorauk?
The creator of the soil and darkness. In some of the old religions, the light made the universe and the sky, but Poadorauk made time and the ground so that things might wither but also grow. Superstitious nonsense, of course.
Tell me about Poadorauk.
There is the story of Haruskin, the first Menoptera, grandmother of us all. But that is a story for larvae.
Tell me. I'd like to hear.
Very well. After Haruskin laid her first eggs, she went to Poadorauk to tell her about the world she imagined for her children. She spoke of the wonderful temples they would build to worship the light, where they would dance and weave songs. No Menoptera would ever want or suffer. It would be paradise. Poadorauk said to Haruskin, "But who will build the temples? Who will raise the harvests? Who will do the work when all the Menoptera are free and at leisure?" But Haruskin had thought of that already. Do you know what she said?
No, but I can guess.
She said, "Oh, we will have slaves."
So she created the Zabi.
Quite so.
Perhaps we should start by talking about the TV series. I will start by saying I remember the first time I saw the Web Planet. It was on a 10th, maybe 15th generation VHS copy that was floating around in fandom in the late 80s, early 90s. Was that how you guys saw that episode for the first time? What about you, Sookie?
My first experience of that is probably exactly the same as you. We used to have meetings in Wolverhampton, and it was a group called the Walls of Fenric, and they'd have, as it says, 5th, 6th, 10th, probably 20th generation copies of old black and white episodes. So all you've seen was a bit of blur on the screen. And that might have been a Dalek, that might have been a Menoptera, that might have been a Zabi. All right. But it was just, there'd be a whole group of us in the hall watching these really, really dodgy copies. And then when I had the VHS, that's when I properly watched it. And to be honest, the memory of reading the Target book, which is a really good Target book, and then following it up with actually watching it on the screen, does give it a bit of a what's the word?
Challenging.
Yes, challenging. Yes. Right. So all the memories that you have from the book, maybe not the 10th generation copy from the book, it's visually right in your own mind, it's fantastic. But then watching it on the screen, with its Vaseline covered lenses and stuff, it's definitely not as good as it should be.
Philip?
I was Target book first. I do remember very clearly reading. That was one of my early ones I first read, probably, I know, eighth or ninth. And by that stage, though, it probably was the one I least liked Target book-wise, but still enjoyed it. And the images, the pictures in that book are still imprinted in my mind because I spent so much time looking at the images. The first time I saw the TV show would have been a big tiered lecture theatre at Sydney Uni. And it was a Doctor Who club meeting. There were six televisions in the theatre, and we used to try and squeeze as close as we possibly could to these TVs hanging from the ceiling to try and watch what it was. And that was the first time I saw it. And I think I enjoyed it because I'd read the book first. Now I was seeing the show. It meshed together. And then, I remember buying the BBC video and being really bored, like amazingly bored with it. I've actually gone back. Hearing this again, I thought I really want to go back and watch the show. It's been a while. Last time I would have seen it was when I was doing The Great Journey with my boys, and we were doing every Doctor Who show for the beginning. And I certainly enjoyed it better that time, but I know they were a bit bored.
Yeah, it's tough going. It's certainly a serial that you've got to be in the mood for. You've got to be in the right mood. I love it, but it's not something I can just go, oh, I might just go and throw that one on. I've got to actually be prepared mentally to be able to handle it. Go on, Phil.
I was going to say, I appreciate it far much more than I enjoy it. So in terms of what they were trying to do, exactly, the risks they were taking, the sets, the costumes, everything was so amazingly out there. I really appreciate it. But actually watching it is a bit harder.
Except when they got to the Optera. Then they obviously ran out of money, big time.
Yeah, that set was awful, wasn't it?
One of my co-hosts on Trek This Out, Lindsay, had to go on to another podcast at very short notice to watch.
Oh, I heard that. I heard that episode.
Right. she, it was an ordeal for her. Right. So I'm just saying, if you need to be, I think, mentally prepared and, you know, do a little bit of research about how they're trying to do this story back in the 60s with the budget that they'd actually got to be able to fully appreciate it. But if you're just going to do it at very short notice, and you see the way things have been done on the screen, you're going to come away very disappointed.
So here in Return to the Web Planet, the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa have returned to Vortis. What were your initial impressions of that one, Suki?
Oh, this is a better story than I thought, the Return of the Crotons. I really enjoyed Return to the Web Planet. Right, I don't know if this is mainly down to Peter Davison, the Doctor and the Nyssa reaction, but the way this story seemed to unfold, you were sucked in. I liked all the world building that they had with the Zabi migrations and then the Loud Seed and the stories behind that. And then the resolution where, I mean, how spoilerific are you getting with these stories?
That's fine. Go
That's
for
okay
it.
With this one.
Okay, with the Loud Seed and the fact that the resolution, I should say, where they're not actual humans, but the synthetic humans, and they've been sent to uninhabited planets to create life, but unfortunately they've ended up on this planet, and so they create something else. This is a fantastic idea, on which I just thought it was the way it came across on the audio, listening to it, it was brilliant. And as I said, I think it was due to quite a bit down to the performances that we had. I really did enjoy this story better than the Return of the Crotons.
Philip?
Well, I enjoyed it less than the Crotons, but that's okay. It's good to be different. I think it actually felt more like a Star Trek story than a Doctor Who story. I thought a lot of the ideas were more next generation, the Lodestar, the synthetic people, a lot of those ideas and the way they played out. I don't really know who it was written by Daniel O'Mahony. Which he's done some stuff for Benny before that, and he's done some good Bennies. So this is his only Doctor Who credit. So I did like how he wrote for the Dr. Nyssa. I liked some of the ideas in terms of, the use of the Zabi was brilliant. I didn't quite get the whole plot in terms of the female character with her wings had been ripped off and tortured by the people in the city. And I didn't think that was necessary, that whole I don't think it went anywhere or took us anywhere. I guess it explained why they weren't living in the city anymore.
I was just going to say, maybe it's just having the visual in your mind of the Doctor having these wings to be able to fly around. It just gives it a bit more for him to do. And it just, in your own mind, it does look visually, fantastic.
Yeah, and I guess there'd be no purpose in having wings, would they? If she had wings, they wouldn't have needed that.
Yeah.
So it would have lost the whole point of the Doctor being able to fly. So I guess that's part of the reason why they did it. So I enjoyed it. I mean, I did actually think they used the Zabi, because, I mean, you've got a creature that can't speak, and yet the Zabi still filled the soundscape and filled the screen, and you got quite scared by them.
Yes, and that is something that they did well in this compared to the TV series, because it's the Zabi sounds throughout the original Web Planet episodes that they use constantly throughout the whole series. You get so sick of that sound. But here they used it very, very sparingly, only when they absolutely needed to. And I loved all those. All the soundscapes were absolutely brilliant. Steve Foxen is a regular with Big Finish and has done lots and lots of things. So he did the music and sound on this one. Directed by Barnaby Edwards, so he's very, very careful when it comes to character. He does characters really well. So he did the Monoptera characters superbly, I thought, and he got the relationship between the two really nicely. So the difference between Crotons that we just talked about with Nick Briggs directing, he does full-on science fiction action. That's his specialty. Barnaby Edwards is character. That's his specialty. So that's the big difference that I got here. So yeah, I love that attention to detail and how it worked. I think Daniel O'Mahony. I can't pronounce that.
It just reminds me of Police Academy.
He wrote that really, really well, and there's some really nice touches, nice nods to the original serial. I really loved it. The resolution actually leaves it open for a further sequel, in my opinion.
I'm just wondering, because it's a lot more character based, is it because they had a character actor in the shape of Sam Kelly, who's quite well known, was quite well known over here, but more as a comedy player, but he was playing quite a serious character. And I think him and Peter Davison bouncing off each other, right? Brilliant. That really did help the story as well. Yeah,
I picked up his voice. I didn't look at the cast list before I listened, and I knew it was him straight away. I know him mainly. I don't know what else he's been in that's really big, but my favourite series with him, it is Allo Allo, first couple of series of that. But he also played a big part in The Holy Terror, which was one of Big Finish's most popular stories of all time. So he's only done two. This was one. The Holy Terror was the other one. So, yeah, hats off to Sam Kelly.
Yeah. I think you really do see the differences in the choices the authors make. We talk about Nicholas Briggs in terms of one of his big stars, of course, is he mixes up time all the time. But he also he loves his Base Under Siege, his body horror. And so a lot of his stories are that Base Under Siege, and you've got people under pressure and suspense and tightness there. And then, so the Crotons, you had the body horror of someone actually being absorbed into the crystalline sequence. Yeah. But he, as you said, it's broad. It's a much larger canvas of a planet. It's the planet that you're returning to rather than the monsters. And so you're seeing a different aspect of the planet and, traveling large ranges by Zabi, by wings, by different methods, but giving you opportunity to grow characters. So I think that therefore the discussion was a lot different. The tension wasn't the same. It was a lot more of a puzzle and trying to work out, well, what's gone wrong? So it's the whole approach was the two totally different stories, which is good. But it's just fascinating how different the two stories were in terms of what they were trying to achieve.
The two different sort of stories, but this one I found a lot more interesting and more engaging than I found Return of the Crotons. I doubt that there's just certain elements within this story that's appealed to me. Right, I'm just that's it. Basically, it's just I thought it was a better story than the other one.
I think part for me, my memory of Return of the Crotons was it wasn't very good, and then I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And so I think it probably maybe increased in my estimation because I went in thinking it's not a very good story and then came out thinking, oh, that was far much, much, much better than I expected it to be. So my expectations had grown with it. Whereas, yeah, Webplanet exactly hit my expectations. So it's interesting how we approach a story and even the mood win, how it affects how good we find it.
Did you notice the pet Zabi's name, Arbora?
Oh, yes.
So they didn't directly reference the fact that it was Barbara, but it was sort of said in a way that it makes you think of Barbara. And the Zabi had appeared in a second Doctor book. So this is the third appearance in extended Doctor Who media. So Twilight of the Gods, 1996, was a book that featured the second Doctor, Jamie and Victoria. So the Zabi featured in that one. Not too many. I think there may have been a Zabi story in one of the early annuals, wasn't there?
Annuals, yeah. I was going to say they're on the front cover of one of the Doctor Who annuals.
The first one, 1965, yeah. The Lair of the Zabi.
That's it.
Yeah. I even have the story. I have the story.
Oh, I've got it too. Nerny.
Almost complete the collection. I've got it as well.
Are we a sad bunch of people, can I just say? Yeah.
It cost me a fair pack.
There's worse things we could be doing, fellas. I think I found mine for about $2
they'll be like that, Dwayne.
In a bargain bin somewhere. Yeah, it was ridiculously cheap. All right. Let's move on to the final story in our trilogy of stories that we're looking at today, The Feast of Axos. Here's a trailer.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions.
Axos calling Earth. Fuel system exhausted. Request immediate assistance. Immediate assistance. Axos calling Earth. Fuel system exhausted. Request immediate assistance. Immediate assistance.
Mission control to spaceship Windermere. You are go or burn.
I can't believe it. We're in space. We're actually in space.
And there she is.
It's huge. And so...
alien?
Doctor?
Where's it coming from?
The time vortex. Someone is playing around with time technology.
Another Time Lord?
Assistance.
What on earth is it?
That is a parasitic organism drifting from planet to planet to suck their energy dry, called Axos.
Okay, we're on our own, kids.
Axos calling Earth. Fuel system exhausted. Request immediate assistance. Immediate assistance. Axos calling Earth.
But now we wake.
Doctor Who, The Feast of Axos. Subscribers get more at bigfinish.com.
So, guys, in all three stories, the TV episodes that they sort of sequel are not too highly regarded by fans. What about... and I don't really understand why The Claws of Axos isn't highly regarded. When I listen to reviews and podcasts and things, they sort of give it a bit of a roasting, Claws of Axos. But to me, I adore that story. What about you fellas?
I've only watched this story once over the years that it's been sitting on my shelf behind me. And it's just one of these stories that has not appealed to me. I think it's... I'm not sure it's because of this actual story itself. Maybe the monster wasn't appealing. The design might not have been good. The characterizations might not have been good. It just didn't appeal for me to go around taking the DVD back off the shelf and putting it into my player to watch it again. So it's just sat there behind me on my shelf. It's just not a great story, I thought. Go on, Philip.
Well, it has nostalgia for me. When I started watching Doctor Who in Australia, so it used to be shown every day at 6:30 at night, and so I'd sit down and watch all the way through it. And we used to go every Tom Baker to go to the end of Talons of Wang Chang, and then go back to Spearhead from Space. But then it would go Spearhead from Space, and then it would jump to Day of the Daleks. And the ABC didn't have the rights to show any master stories, and so we just leapt over three of the stories from season 7 because they were too long. I think is why the ABC didn't buy them, or they're black and white. And then left the entire, all the master stories. And so when the ABC got the rights to actually start showing them, and so we started again from, you know, back to, and that's when it was the same year they went back to, we saw the Crotons, we saw the Mind Robber, and then they started showing Ambassadors of Death, Silurians, other way around, those. And then, so when we got to the Master, suddenly I was seeing who I'd been reading these books for these years, and Roger Delgado was spectacular. And so we bought a video recorder, and so I take these episodes, and I watched them over and over and over again. And so, yeah, Claws of Axos.
The black and white too in those days.
Claws of Axos was, I think, oh no, it was
pretty
black
sure
and white.
It was a black and white one.
You are right, it was black. Yes, it was black and white back then. You are, yep. But I just remember watching it so many times. So it had a special place because having gone through two or three cycles of Doctor Who, always missing the Master.
Nutrition cycles?
Every Master episode was suddenly very precious.
I always found the Axos creature really, really frightening. It's a really, really psychedelic story, especially when you see it in colour. It's just incredible. And we've all had the chance to see it now that the box set for season 8. Oh, you don't get the Blu-rays, do you, Philip?
I don't get the Blu-rays, no.
Ah, so yeah, with season 8 just being released recently, I've looked at all those stories over the last month or so. And I've always loved that one, and people have said that the Third Doctor is really cranky in it and very unlikable, but I've not really ever seen that. It's just one of those ones that I guess I go against the popular opinion, I suppose.
So what I'm thinking now, that you pair do really like this story, and you mentioned that the fact that it's on Blu-ray, and I have got the Blu-ray up there. I might actually go around re-watching it after I finish this, right, and might be give it a second opinion on it.
There's great special effects. There's some really great things in it. Yeah, the way that some faces blow up, and yeah, there's some special moments. It's really worth watching.
Absolutely. I'll do that. So as far as the story the Feast of Axos goes, give you my first impressions on that one. I think the attention to detail in the sound design, who does the sound design in this one? Oh, Jamie Robertson. So he's another one who's done lots and lots of Big Finish before, but another one that's been directed by Nicholas Briggs. Who wrote this? Mike Maddox. Mike Maddox hasn't written too many Big Finish stories at all.
Gods and Monsters, Trial of the Vow Yard.
Yep.
Legend of the Cybermen. Oh, that's good. And an episode.
Legend of the Cybermen is excellent.
Yeah, I think it was on the back of that he was asked to do this.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Gods and Monsters is great too.
Yeah. Yeah, that trilogy is very good. But yeah, I thought the sounds are just there in the background. I think Nick Briggs has been very careful in his instructions to Jamie Robertson. Let's get as close as we can to all those Axos sounds. And this is what I love about audio, when it takes you right back to stories like that and back to eras like that. So this is kind of a blending. This is a blending of the Sixth Doctor and the 70s. It's just fantastic. When you've got Bernard Holly coming back to reprise that role as well, it was an absolute winner for me. It was a reminder again. I haven't listened to too much Sixth Doctor and Evelyn lately, but the Sixth Doctor and Evelyn, they are a mind-blowing pairing. It's really tough, isn't it? Because you've got the Eighth Doctor and Charlie, which are really good. But I think for me personally, my preference, if I had to choose between the two, I'd go Sixth Doctor and Evelyn. There's just something about Evelyn that's just so relatable. She's the perfect companion, if you ask me. I don't know. What do you think about Evelyn as a companion, Sookie?
I've listened to a few of her stories in the past, and I think Maggie Stables was absolutely fantastic as Evelyn. Right, she was just brilliant. In this story itself, Right, she's there as a voice of reason to help. She's trying to convince the doctor that maybe Thomas Brewster has turned over a new leaf, or you should be helping him. And it's the doctor that's been rather abrupt with her, but she comes across as very loving, very warm. And it's also the scene where she actually starts flouting away, and then you see the angst, between the doctor trying to think he's about to lose Evelyn forever. Right, it's just heartbreaking. And that's one of the things that really highlighted the relationship between these pair, because there is a genuine love, genuine warmth between the pair. And this is due to the way she's been written, the way the character's portrayed, and the way Maggie Staples was in real life, from what I've been told. Because all I could hear from Big Finish podcasts and other podcasts that I've listened to in the past, that she was such a well-loved character actor of the Big Finish company, right, that she would be able to gel with most people. And you just, I think she, the character itself, is brilliant, and she's utilized well in this story, and this is what you needed.
Just that scene that you just referred to, when she was floating off, there was a scene after where she was in space floating alone, and she was delivering a monologue there. It was actually giving me butterflies. It was that good. I thought, oh, she's just, it's just such a shame that she's no longer with us. That was, but at the same time, it's fantastic that we've got that collection of stories with Evelyn. Philip?
I'm going to start with there then. My memories of this was that scene. So when I went back to listen to this, my memory was of that scene with Evelyn. And I was thinking, that has stuck in my mind so strongly. And going back again today, a couple of days ago, I listened to it. It is still so, so powerful. She plays that perfectly. Just the, oh, I'm an inch away. And, oh, doctor, I unhooked myself already. I thought we were doing this. And it is just underplayed so well. And there's no panic. It's all very calm. And bit by bit, you hear, and just the way the other characters are just describing, she's gone. Like, yeah, she's only 2 feet away, but we've lost her. We'll never get her back. And it was just, yeah, that scene is some of the most powerful stuff, I think, written for audio for a very long time. This is a interesting trilogy because it actually happened after, I'm pretty sure Evelyn had left already. So I think her farewell episode had already happened, and they did another trilogy and brought Evelyn back. So it was earlier before she left for these three stories. And by this stage, Maggie Staples is pretty sick. And yet she was determined to still come back and do these three stories because she just loved working so much, loved working with Colin, loved the fans. There's a couple of times you can actually hear she's struggling in terms of just being ill. But nevertheless, the performance she manages to give is just breathtaking. So, yeah, just my high praise to Evelyn always. I was once again surprised how good the whole story was, though. As I said, I had remembered that whole floating off scene, but hadn't remembered anything else. But it actually gelled really cleverly together. There's some, you know, clever moments. The sound design, as I said, is great. But all the actors just are playing it really well. I mean, there's a few standard Doctor Who tropes. The rich person is really evil, trying to, you know, get power for himself. You know, all those usual tropes are usually there. But, yeah, all up, it's a great story. And actually, I would just point out, too, just the covers. The cover to this, and also the Return of the Web Planet, I meant to mention, too. Return of the Web Planet cover is magnificent in terms of being like Chris Achilleos production, so that's just amazing to see. But also, I had forgotten the fact that there was a Golden Doctor and why that was significant. And then seeing it again, I was, oh, of course, that's why that cover's done the way it is. But all the golds and colours that cover's been done with, it's just beautiful.
So, Suki, this story started off with the previous story ending on a cliffhanger. How did you cope with that, not knowing the exact story?
Didn't really matter, because it was sort of explained within this story that Thomas Brewster was a sort of baddin, he's holding a gun on the Doctor and Evelyn. It was explained within the story, so it doesn't really matter whether I missed the story or missed the whole backstory for Thomas Brewster's character, because it all seemed to be explained as the story progressed, that this is his character. And I think I have listened to one of his stories before in the past, but I can't remember which one.
Yeah. It's an interesting character because he's you know, travelled with the Fifth Doctor, travelled with the Sixth Doctor now. He's even had mention in the latest Eighth Doctor series, Stranded. So, not that he was in it, but I think he was dropped at that 221. Is it 21B Baker Street?
Yep. And there's Companion Chronicles with him as well.
That's so right.
A combined one with him, Nicholas Courtney,
and
Annika Wills. Yeah.
Three companions, it's called.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense.
It does. It does. Yeah. And so Philip, what was your overall impression of the story as far as the Axons goes and going back and sort of being a continuation of the Claws of Axos?
I think it was a nice reversal. They didn't try and just redo the Claws of Axos. I thought, you know, setting it in space, in the time loop, having really the humans are the baddies more so than the Axons are. So I thought that was a nice touch. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good yarn. But as I said, in some ways, maybe that scene is so powerful. That 10 or 15 minutes with Evelyn in space is so powerful, it almost overshadows everything else because it is just so well done.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got to say, though, the character of Thomas Brewster was never really a character that appealed to me too much. Out of all the characters that have been invented by Big Finish, it's interesting that two of the male characters are both called Thomas, because Hex, his actual first name is Thomas as well. But Brewster, yeah, it never really gelled with me as a companion. So I don't know how you feel.
Is this because he is not a sympathetic character? He's a person that does bad things, albeit for his own selfish reasons. But is that why? If it had been like a companion that really wants to be with the Doctor to help out to make sure everything's done, right? He's a bit more sympathetic and it would appeal to a lot more people. But because he's going out of his way to be selfish and wants things done, things for himself, right? It becomes across as a companion that people they'll really like. A bit like Turlough was earlier on.
I was going to say that, a lot like Turlough, actually. But I, you know, Turlough had an arc where he sort of came around and was very likable in the end. But he was always had that level of distrust towards Turlough, and I guess it's the same with Brewster, isn't it? He was a bit more in your face though than Turlough.
I never think of Thomas Brewster as a companion. I think he's someone who travels with the Doctor, but he's never actually a companion because he's always about himself. And there's no point where he stops being himself first, I don't think. So in all his stories, it's always about him, what he's doing, what he wants. He will sometimes work okay with the Doctor, but he's really just about him. So in that sense, I don't really consider him a companion, just someone who hops on the TARDIS, steals the TARDIS, sells bits of the TARDIS. It's all about him.
I've just got visions in my head of River Song doing exactly the same sort of thing.
Do you think that it was necessary to have Colin Baker playing that golden Axon character? Do you think it may have taken away from Bernard Holly's portrayal? Because he was playing basically the eye that you see on the cover. And then you had the separate Axon character of Colin Baker. Do you think that may have detracted at all? Was it necessary?
Well, yeah, I don't think it was necessary. I think it was confusing as well because you got the two different portrayals by Colin Baker within same scenes. It sometimes got a bit confusing, right? I don't understand why they didn't use Bernard Holly after the initial absorption of the Doctor's character, right? They could have just, you know, reverted back and just used Bernard Holly, just and occasionally bring in Colin Baker as the absorbed Axon. But it was confusing, very confusing on occasions.
Okay. I mean, plot-wise, he was needed because you needed to have the threat of the TARDIS being taken over and someone being able to fly the TARDIS. So that was the necessity for the plot. But as you say, I think in some ways, just having his mind absorbed and allowing just Bernard Holly to have been the bad, he would have worked just as well. I guess I'm just trying to pump up Colin's role a bit.
It does make for a fantastic cover, though. I'll give it that.
Does make a great cover.
Any final thoughts on this one, guys? Suki?
No, not really. It's a very enjoyable adventure, and I did like some of the lines that they did have in there. I mean, there's one which is like Barbarella's cast-offs, Right, and how are these clouds being sorted? Are they sorted by chest size, which is a couple of lines that Evelyn said. So it's an enjoyable story. But Axos is something, I don't know if you guys knew, probably did, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Right, Axos is returning in September 2022, Quantum of Axos. So this is not a single appearance by a classic series monster.
I was going to say we only just got in. There's a 10th Doctor adventure coming up. It is currently still the single appearance, but yeah, there's a 10th Doctor story coming up by Roy Gill. So the Axons return.
Excellent. Very good. Philip, your final thoughts?
Oh, I love the opportunity of being forced to go back and listen to stuff I haven't listened to for a while. And so, you know, one of the great things I'm loving about this podcast is, you suddenly decide we're going to do these three stories. And oh, no. And then I go back and listen to them. So, it's good reason to go back. And every time I go back, I find new things to enjoy. And that's part of the joy of the Big Finish stories is there's enough depth in there, enough storyline to actually be worthwhile going back.
Great. And how did you feel about the experience, Suki, going and listening to some, being forced to listen to some Big Finish for this?
Yes, being forced by you, strong-armed. No, it was brilliant. It was great. As it says, I do listen to certain Big Finish releases, or I have bought them or gifted them. It's been interesting listening to these because I'm pretty sure I haven't listened to the two hour-long episodes, but I might have listened to the Feast of Axos many years ago. So it's interesting going back to them, and it is great. It's the same as when we're doing Proctor Who and Trek Me Sound, when you go back to watch very old episodes and you think, oh, that's brilliant. That is, it might have been, it looks rubbish now or it looks crap, but the nostalgia value and the experience of rewatching them, it just brings out so many happy memories.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to just make a couple of recommendations. Normally we do recommendations of something that we've been listening to, but in your case, Suki, it can be something that you've been watching if you like, if you haven't been listening to too much, but it's not your turn, Suki, because it's Philip's turn.
Is it my turn first?
It's always your turn.
I've noticed that. I'm going to recommend something. I've only started the first half an hour. I've downloaded the new Megalos audiobook. Oh. So written by Terence Dix, but it's narrated
Who's
by
John
Koshaw.
Ah,
so part of the reason why I got it was because I'm just loving John Koshaw at the moment in everything he's doing. He makes the most amazing Tom Baker, naturally enough, in this. And also John Leeson's playing K-9 as well. So, yeah, it's. I remember the book first coming out many years ago. So it's bringing back some nice memories and just being read so beautifully and a nice soundscape.
Excellent. So, what about you, Suki?
Right, so it's going to be TV shows. I mean, I've started the brand new Marvel show Loki, which I've been really enjoying the first four episodes. And also on Disney Plus is MODOK. I don't know if you've heard of this, Marvel's MODOK. It's from the same people that it's an animated show based on this character. It's quite a dark comedy, so I've been enjoying that one. And the other thing that I've been is I've never watched The Office, the American version of The Office, and there's somewhere like nearly 200 episodes, and I've started binging that right for the last 2-3 weeks, and so I'm now to about fourth season, and I'm so really, I'm just really enjoying that. So yeah, I'm recommending a 20-year-old TV show called The Office.
Thanks for that, Suki. I'm going to actually recommend, because I didn't mention it earlier, but I'm going to recommend that anyone gets Return of the Crotons, not just for the story, but for the incredible interview with Philip Maddock at the end. That is worth the price of admission alone. I'm not sure that I've heard Philip Maddock talk about all his roles in Doctor Who, right from the Crotons through. He doesn't talk about Power of Kroll much, but he talks a lot about Brain of Morbius. So I'm going to throw in a little bit here for you.
I listened to it myself and I realized, first of all, it's a very good story. First of all, it's the variation within it, not just my character like a Frankenstein character, building a body and all that. But my helpers in it were very memorable. I mean, the gang of ladies, all that story going on. And it was very understandable. It's futuristic, it was all that. But I thought, for most people, believable in that we could come into that kind of world eventually. And the character himself allowed me instinctively to vary it. You can't just play a villain. This man believes what he's doing, and nobody really should stop him because he's creative. He wants to build a body. He wants to finish that body. And we get into that world then of the soft sci-fi at its best. And you've got the counterpart within the Doctor himself. And the two worlds are coming together very easily. And there is a follow-through. You want to know, what is he going to do? Not that character out of sci-fi, but that real man himself. What is he going to do? Where is he going to find the head from? And of course, your imagination does run riot a bit then as to whose head he'd love to put on it.
So yeah, Return of the Crotons. Can't recommend that highly enough, particularly for the interview at the end with Philip Maddock. So thanks very much, Sookie, for coming on. Really appreciate that.
Oh, it's a pleasure coming on. It's lovely chatting to you guys. I just want to say to the listeners, this has been a bit of a nightmare getting all this together. And I appreciate the patience that you pair have put up with today. And so thank you very much, guys.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Sookie. And catch Sookie on Proctor Who and Trek This Out. That's where you can hear more of Sookie, or as they like to refer to him, Grandad.
Oi, pack it in.
You have been listening to The Sirens of Audio, episode 66, Slight Returns of the Crotons, the Zabi and the Axons, with special guest host Sookie Kark and your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Next time on the show, it's Randomoids 5, Attack of the Selectatrons, where we'll be looking at two Eighth Doctor adventures, Scaredy Cat and The Vengeance of Morbius. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys. Email address is sirensofaudio@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us on your favourite podcatcher. Join our Facebook group by searching for The Sirens of Audio on that platform. Tweet us at Audio Sirens. And leave your own audio clip of feedback for us at anchor.fm/sirensofaudio for us to play on a future show. And just remember, don't be a sookie and leave your CDs in their plastic wrap. You might be pleasantly surprised if you actually listen to them, because audio drama